As long-time listeners of the Kubernetes Bytes podcast know, I like to visit different national parks and go on day hikes. As part of these hikes, it's always necessary to hydrate during and after it's done. This is where our next sponsor comes in, Liquid IV. I've been using Liquid IV since last year on all of my national park trips because it's really easy to carry and I don't have to worry about buying and carrying Gatorade bottles with me. A single stick of Liquid IV in 16 ounces of water hydrates 2 times faster than water and has more electrolytes than ever. The best part is I can choose my own flavor. Personally, I like passion fruit, but they have 12 different options available. If you want to change the way you hydrate when you're outside, you can get 20% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code KubernetesBytes at checkout. That's 20% off anything you order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code KubernetesBytes at liquidiv.com.
You are listening to Kubernetes Bytes, a podcast bringing you the latest from the world of cloud-native data management. My name is Ryan Wallner, and I'm joined by Bhavin Shah, coming to you from Boston, Massachusetts. We'll be sharing our thoughts on recent cloud-native news and talking to industry experts about their experiences and challenges managing the wealth of data in today's cloud-native ecosystem. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you are. We're coming to you from Boston, Massachusetts. Today is November 2nd, 2023. Hope everyone is doing well and staying safe. Let's dive into it. Bhavin, how you been, man?
I'm doing good. November already, dude. Like,
can you believe
winter
it?
Winter is here. Like, I can feel it.
Don't
like,
say
it,
that.
I don't know. I don't like cold as much, clearly. And now it's officially like heater season. Like I have to like make sure.
Heater season. I like that.
Yeah. Heater season.
What do you keep your house on?
70.
Holy moly.
That's hot.
I keep my house on 64, 65.
Okay. That's why I get these high electricity bills.
Maybe that's it. I don't know. It all depends on your house too. Like if you're like, let's go more heat. Sure, you got to keep it higher and stuff. But I say grab a blanket, you know?
Or a jacket, yeah.
Okay. I'm sure mine will make its way up as, you know, the winter goes on.
Okay. Time to mess with the thermostat. How are you doing, Ryan?
I'm good. I just got back from some time off. Spent a week in New Mexico. Very interesting place.
I know.
Nearly got bit by a rattlesnake, but I'm still here.
Oh, wow. What does nearly mean? Like, okay, how close did it get?
A foot.
Okay. Oh, okay. That's, away.
That's too close for me, at least.
So, I was like, how did you evade it? Like, what did you hit it?
No.
Something?
So, I was at the VLA, the Very Large Array in New Mexico, which, if you don't know, is basically one of the United States, maybe in the world, I forget, one of the largest radio-based telescopes. So, if you've seen any like really, you know, deep space images, it's likely taken with this VLA. It was made in the 1980s and it's been updated and stuff like that.
Okay.
Crazy cool technology, but it's in the middle of this really dry, high desert New Mexico on purpose, right? So less radio interference and dry climates, those kind of things. But there's signs all over the place when you're visiting this place. It says, beware of rattlesnakes. I spent like a half hour there. We were kind of passing through, didn't see a rattlesnake. I was walking back towards the entrance. I was like, oh, I'll stop at the gift shop.
Yeah.
I touched the doorknob of the gift shop and I just hear the rattle of a rattlesnake at my feet. So imagine holding a door and looking down, right? So that's how close it was. And the thing was reared back at me. Didn't strike at me. Luckily, I was wearing really like thick, heavy, you know, dirt bike boots right at the time. So, you know, in most cases, I might have been okay if it hit the boot. But yeah, I stepped back and I got a video of it and stuff like that. It's the closest I've been to a rattlesnake. I thought it was very kind of it to rattle. You know, it actually makes a lot of evolutionary sense now. It's really nice of it to have that.
Do you think like it's like an employee that works for the gift shop? Like everybody should get that experience. It just stands there.
That's it. No, it was very real. It was a very real rattlesnake. And the gift shop was closed. I didn't even get to go inside. So.
Damn it.
Yeah, that and so like natural tarantulas just out were also pretty cool. Apart from like the elk and antelope and stuff out there.
No, I think whenever my wife hates spiders and its entire family, like tarantulas, everything.
Yeah.
Whenever like one of our friends went to a national park in Utah last month, and they just shared a pic of a tarantula on the hike on the trail, and she wouldn't even open that message. Like she waited for like the history to scroll up in WhatsApp so that then she can open it up. Like she really freaks out.
They're really cool, but they're really big, right? Especially if you're not from those areas, you're not used to seeing a spider that big just kind of chilling out there.
I know.
I mean, we have wood spiders here in the Northeast, which get pretty big, but not tarantula big, you know?
Yeah. Like, whenever I've camped in like New Hampshire or Maine, we haven't seen spiders as much in those campgrounds. I know. This summer we went to Vermont to camp, and the entire campground was like, had all those spiders. Spiders. Like we reserved the campsite for 2 days, but then again my wife is afraid of spiders, so we just had to leave in a day. Like
that's one thing you can't escape is nature when you're camping.
Damn spiders.
I totally get it, man. Yeah, this is gonna be a fun week. Obviously KubeCon's coming up.
Let's go KubeCon. I know,
Halloween for those who do that kind of thing. I was the Mandalorian, by the way. Well, my daughter wanted me to be an astronaut, and I totally forgot till the day of. So I went to Party City. Closest thing I could find to an astronaut was Mandalorian. I would say technically,
he qualifies. So did your daughter agree with that idea?
Like, yeah, she did. She looked at me like I was expecting a big helmet, you know? Yeah. Well, I got a helmet. I mean, everyone wears a helmet all the time. So I think it works.
Nice.
Anyway, yeah, KubeCon's coming up. You know, we have a fun episode coming up here with about Crossplane and what's going on there. We'll introduce our speaker in just a minute. But I think before that, we have some news to talk about.
Let's do some news.
We'll be right back after this short break. If you've ever had a puppy and raised it to become a big dog, you know that changing food and finding the right food is hard to get right. Ultimately, you want them to feel good and act happy and be okay with what they're eating. They're part of your family, after all. I have an 8-year-old golden retriever named Roscoe, and he's always had a sensitive stomach, so finding the right food was kind of a pain. That's where Nom Nom comes in. Nom Nom's food is full of fresh protein that your dog loves, and the vitamins and nutrients they need to thrive. You can actually see proteins in vegetables like beef, chicken, pork, peas, carrots, kale, and more in the ingredients. So here's how it works. You tell them about your puppy, the age, breed, weight, allergies, protein preferences, chicken, pork, beef, and they'll tailor a specific amount of individually packaged Nom Nom meals and send them straight to you. If you're ready to make the switch to fresh, order Nom Nom today and go to https://trynom.com/KubernetesBites and get your 50% off of your first order plus free shipping. Plus, Nom Nom comes with a money-back guarantee. If your dog's tail isn't wagging within 30 days, Nom Nom will refund your first order. No fillers, no nonsense, just Nom Nom. And we're back.
Like this year, I've seen a trend where some vendors have already started releasing what their like the KubeCon announcements a week before.
Oh yeah.
So obviously, instead of doing like a lot of news this time, I was like, let's keep it to 3, and then we'll cover all the news that we see in the ecosystem the week after.
Yep.
Okay.
As usual. So,
the first thing, starting with the funding round, ChainGuard, a startup in the DevSecOps or Kubernetes security ecosystem, raised Series B funding, $61 million. Again, with the trend, they didn't share what their company is now valued at, but they just shared that the total money they have raised is $116 million. A couple of interesting things that they do. They publish their own images. So their whole story is, we'll give you the minimal hardened images that you need to run different containers that are signed by Sixtor that include their own SBOM. So instead of the user having to build their own images and then worry about CVEs, they can just use this, the images that ChainGuard provides you. Like they have a cool list where instead of all the day zero and day one vulnerabilities and CVEs showing up in images that are available on Docker Hub, they're like, our images have zero CVEs. And then they also talk about how this helps organizations reduce the noise that they see in their scanner tools, like scanning tools for their applications running on Kubernetes and the tools that they use to scan container images. So definitely an interesting startup working on real things. They also have like a professional services arm where they can do like assessments, trainings, integrations, and consulting work for you. So yeah, they raise new money.
Yeah, cool article about, I think, their integration with sort of an API in front of the vulnerability status, so you can integrate it into the SPOM software stuff. And you know, everybody loves that word.
Yeah.
Versus the acronym. But yeah.
Cool. Okay. And then the Honeycomb, right? Our observability friends. I know we have been trying to get somebody to go deeper dive into observability, and we might have an episode soon, but Honeycomb announced a new offering called Honeycomb for Kubernetes. Their whole story is don't treat issues like hot potato and transfer it between teams, like developers blaming it on platform or infrastructure teams. Like, it's a Kubernetes issue. And then Kubernetes is like, nope, it's a application issue.
No more hot potato.
Yeah, no more
hot
potato.
Enjoy your lukewarm to cold potato.
Yeah. So they have like a new dashboard where they have like advanced correlation workflows. They have new default dashboards around like node metrics and monitoring app pods that are running on top. And you can, if one of the examples that they have is like four different graphs, and you can look at the timelines and map what was going on with each different component. And then they also added like a natural language query assistant. So instead of you having to write complex queries to find the exact pod and find this specific metric that you're looking for, just tell it like, okay, give me XYZ about an application pod, and it will generate the query for you. So that was pretty cool. So that's new from Honeycomb. And then finally, Microsoft launched a new open source project from their incubation team called Radius. So Radius is supposed to be an open source cloud native application platform. Initially, I felt like it was an IDP, but reading and it competes with Backstage. But looking at their FAQs, even they call out that this is not meant to be a replacement for IDP or a replacement for Backstage. This is just an application platform that allows you to build application graphs for components that are not just running inside Kubernetes, but if you have like S3 buckets, if you are leveraging existing tools, if you are relying on identity systems that are outside your Kubernetes clusters, you can visualize and implement everything in Radius and then use that to provision it across multiple different clouds. Right now they support Azure and AWS. So if you want to look, this is still like brand new, right? Like they have been incubating this, now it's out in the public, but they use, or from an orchestration perspective, they allow you to use Bicep, which is again the next generation of ARM or Azure resource management automation that they have. Or if you want to use the AWS Azure or Kubernetes Terraform providers, you can use that too. So that's something new in this application platform or development platform ecosystem.
I like how they make note to say that, and maybe OpenTofu, as long as it remains compatible, right?
Yep.
They're like, we want to, but we'll see.
Yeah. But yeah, that's it for news for me. I know we'll have a loaded episode after KubeCon.
We will have a loaded episode of all the fun stuff that comes out and some of our observations and trends and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Cool. I just have a few as well. So the first one was around security. It was an urgent security flaw in the Nginx ingress controller for Kubernetes. So this is one that I think a lot of people probably use. Nginx is very popular ingress controller and used in a lot of examples as well. So, you know, possibly there's more of it out there, that kind of thing. But it basically allows attackers to sort of inject code, get security credentials, and kind of, you know, do all sorts of bad and erroneous things. So there are three CVEs listed in the article here. And it's, I think, as of this article was unpatched, but I'm sure that'll change soon. So definitely go take a look at that if you are using the Nginx ingress controller. This kind of thing is pretty common, I think, as especially if you're using bleeding edge stuff, and we hear about security stuff all the time. So don't take a look at that. The next one I had here was that Cloud Casa, which I believe we talked about in Amsterdam. They made quite some noise and just, you know, had a really great booth set up and a lot of people talking about it. They've now moved to a self-hosted version. So Cloud Casa was SaaS based, which, you know, is very useful for many people, but to certain use cases, you know, they have to bring it on-prem. There's, you know, data privacy, there's, you know, control aspects. And so, yeah, they have a self hosted version of this deployment, which is in conjunction with its suite, that is used for SaaS. So go check that out. I think pretty cool stuff they're up to. And the last one is around KubeCost, which, you know, we've spoke to on the show. Yeah, KubeCost. So this is basically an advancement of KubeCost and what they're up to. But the thing I took most out of it is they supported access to provider billing, meaning cloud-based resources.
Nice.
A lot, you know, they were focused on Kubernetes and everything you get out of Kubernetes, but obviously a big part of that is the infrastructure you're running on. So part of this update taps into the visibility that you have with your provider today. I think it's AWS, Azure, and GCP, and more in the future, kind of a deal. So hopefully that gives folks some, you know, better fully rounded capability to kind of look at their overall cost metrics, because that is, you know, Kubernetes is just part of the game at the end of the day. So now you can do it in one place, hopefully. Very cool. And that is our news for today's episode. All right, so let's dive into this episode. We have Victor Farsik, the developer advocate for Upbound, here to talk to us about Crossplane and what it's all about and how it works. So without further ado, let's get Victor on the show. All right. Welcome to Kubernetes Bytes, Victor. So glad to have you here. Why don't you give our audience a little introduction of who you are and what you're up to?
I'm Victor, and I work in Upbound. It's a company behind Crossplane. And what I'm up to is hard to define, because I change what I do on a weekly basis. So, you know, think of me like a kid, 10-year-old that gets a new toy every week. That's me.
That sounds like a fun way to be, honestly.
Yeah.
I know you've been super busy, so thank you for joining us. Like, I saw that you guys did a whole virtual conference or something at Upbound. I saw your talk with Kelsey just to get ready for this episode. So,
Yeah, that was a couple of weeks ago, yeah.
Okay. So
very cool. Well, I know that Crossplane has been something I've heard a lot about. Haven't done a ton of it myself, looked into it myself, but I'm interested to learn more. Be ashamed.
I know turn around into the corner and stay there ashamed for a minute.
Listen, I know a lot of people are excited about it, so you must be doing something good. That's all I gotta say. Bob, why don't you kick us
off? So Victor, I think that's where we can get started. Like, okay, can you give us a quick overview of what Crossplane is, and like what was the need for building something like Crossplane, and when it started?
Yeah, so when it started, I'm not sure, let's say maybe 5-6 years ago, you know, the idea or something like that. So there are two major parts of Crossplane. One is what we call providers, which essentially allow you to extend Kubernetes to manage anything you want, right? Hey, you would like to use Kubernetes API to manage AWS resources? There is an AWS provider. You want to manage, I don't know, databases? There is a SQL provider, Google provider, whatever, right? So it's the idea is to extend Kubernetes beyond what many people understanding is of what Kubernetes is, right? Many people, when you speak with them, they kind of, okay, so what is Kubernetes? And they will tell you, and this is my own interpretation, not their words, oh, Kubernetes is a thingy that allows you to run containers. And I think that's complete misunderstanding of what Kubernetes is, right?
Yeah.
To me, the ability to run containers is just almost insignificant compared to what it really is. And what it really is an extensible API with the control loop that allows you to manage anything you want, right? Hey, if you install right now, I don't know, Knative, all of a sudden you manage serverless applications. If you install whatever else, you will suddenly be managing virtual machines and so on and so forth, right? And Crossplane puts it on a very different level, right? We have probably... if you would install all the providers, you would probably get around, and I'm guessing the number right now, a couple of thousand, maybe 5,000 CRDs.
Oh, wow.
That allow you to manage to create your own custom resources that will manage something, whatever that something
too
is.
Too many.
Right?
Don't install them all at the same time, really, right?
No. So that's a word of advice. If you take a small cluster, relatively small, with a small control plane, and you install thousands of CRDs, your Kubernetes cluster is going to say kaboom. And that will be the last thing you will hear from it, right? Because actually, funny thing that it's possible that, I cannot confirm it, but it's possible that Crossplane was the first tool or project that to find the limits of Kubernetes in terms of how many CRDs it can handle, right? Now, we and community behind Kubernetes is working to increase that number. But yeah, don't install 5,000. Nobody needs that.
We've definitely heard from various people we've interviewed or just, you know, talking to folks in the community that Kubernetes is definitely becoming more of this generalized orchestration system, right? Mm-hmm. As you said, it's, you know, containers is sort of a means, a prerequisite to an end, early days where you know, Kubernetes just really is orchestrating containers, but now it's a lot more than that, right? With Crossplane or even some of the edge kind of components that you can have where you can kind of digital twins, and it's becoming more of this abstract orchestration engine, so to speak, where you can do a lot of different things with it. So it's really cool technology.
Gotcha. And like what I took away from it was like, okay, so I can use Crossplane on Kubernetes, but also manage cloud resources. So like I can manage AWS resources or Azure resources or Google resources. And there
exactly.
There are already these providers that are built in, right? Or available.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Perfect. Exactly. So if I would put it in other words, the goal of Crossplane from certain perspective would be to enable normal people, when I say normal people, I mean not AWS, mm-hmm. to do what AWS is doing. That means that enables people to create their own control plane, right? Everybody, that's almost a funny thing. Everybody has been using control planes for a very, very long time. It's just that nobody knew that they're using control planes. You think, okay, so I send an API request to AWS and then that's it. No, that's not it. Behind that API, there is a control plane that ensures that things are happening, that they're in the right place, right moment, you know, all the shenanigans, everything that needs to happen for you to run a silly EC2 instance is done by a control plane. And big providers have been using control planes behind their APIs for a long time. Now, what we are doing is actually enabling through Kubernetes everybody else to have something very, very similar, right? And that's where the second part of Crossplane comes in. Apart from those providers, so those providers that I mentioned, almost nobody uses them in a way I explained so far, right?
Okay.
Okay.
Because there is a second part which we call compositions. Okay. Which allow you to create your own services in a way, mm-hmm. right? Your own custom resource definitions with controllers and so on and so forth. So you mm-hmm. as a person working in a company, you would say, okay, so we manage databases in our company. Excellent. How many people understand VPCs and subnets and all that stuff? Not many, right? Yeah. I want to create a service that will enable people to manage a database. And then you create what we call a composition that says, okay, this is the interface. This is the API that you can use to manage databases. And that API will be whatever you choose. Mm-hmm. Let's say I will allow people to select whether they want Postgres or MySQL, whether they should run it in this region or that region, whatever the contract is that you want to establish with your users. And then behind the scenes, you will define what that composition does. Okay, so when they actually give me this contract, this API request, I will create behind the scenes everything needed. I don't know, database with networking, with storage, with some schema, whatever that something is. So it enables you. So think of it this way. And I know that I'm going all over the place. You need to stop
me. No, you're doing great. you haven't lost me yet.
Yeah.
So what AWS is to, let's say, you, in a way, what it is provides a service to you. That's what you can enable others to do, right? Kind of, you can create a service in a similar fashion by extending Kubernetes API, creating your own schemas and all that stuff, and saying behind the scenes this will happen, but you don't care, right? You get the database.
Yeah, right. Like to boil it down, maybe to an oversimplified example, if I were, you know, onboarding new developers, I could create a composition that just says developer environment. And really, I control on the back end what that means, whether that means a VM with the, you know, access to certain types of data or something like that.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
One way I tend to explain it is that we are all trying to create something that is at the right level of abstraction for somebody, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There is a person who likes to, I don't know, compile their own kernel, right? And then there is a different level of abstraction that we would, you can call it distribution, right? No, I use Ubuntu. I'm not going to compile my own kernel, right?
Yeah.
And so on and so forth. And the same thing is with this. And say, okay, so if you want to care, if you want to assemble 57 different components in AWS to get the database, go ahead, right? Yeah. Or I can give it to you as a service.
Gotcha.
So before I move on to a little bit about how it's like installed in a Kubernetes cluster and things, I want to ask one more question, which is, what, in your words, would be sort of the benefit of using Cropsplane to manage cloud resources over native tooling from those clouds?
Okay, I'm going to do something very tricky and answer it with a question.
Okay, good.
And either of you can answer, or both.
Yeah,
sure.
What is the benefit? Are you using Kubernetes? I'm assuming in some capacity. Okay, what are the benefits? Why are you using Kubernetes?
Bob, you want to go first?
Yeah, sure. Like for me, Kubernetes, I think, provides that consistent orchestration layer, right? Like regardless of where I'm running, I know I can just copy paste my YAML files and it can be deployed against any environment. I think that's consistency is the reason for me.
Okay. And you?
Yeah, for me, it's a number of things, but in I'd say in this sort of context, it's definitely about having sort of a single platform, right, that I could deploy on-prem, you know, given my background and where I work, as well in the cloud, and sort of utilize that abstraction layer, again, talking about abstractions, as sort of the you know, component that I interact with, rather than necessarily having to write something like, you know, Terraform for everything or that kind of thing.
So the answer to your question, now going back to the question, is that.
Right? Yes.
Whatever. So actually, or to put it in another way, right? Whatever the reasons why you're using Kubernetes for whatever you're using, let's say for your applications package that's container images, right? Yep. Those same reasons equally apply to something else, right? Why is it better to use Kubernetes? And I'm talking about Kubernetes API now, right? And not and the scheduling and the control loop and drift detection, all the stuff. They're equally valid for containers as for WASM, as for Lambdas, as for databases, as for other clusters or VMs. Kind of like that same logic is either good or it's not good, right? Mm-hmm. To manage something. And if it's good to manage one thing, then it's just as good to manage something else, right? Yeah. It's a management, it's an orchestration, right? It's a management platform. Call it what you want. But the arguments are equally valid for whatever is the good. The bad thing would be is if you answer, no, Kubernetes is not good for me, then the answer is, then that answer would be valid for Crossplane as well. Don't go there.
Just move on down the line.
Yeah, exactly.
Got it. Okay, great. So I want to switch gears a little bit and talk more about the specific technology and how someone would start to, I guess, use it either on their laptop or in a Kubernetes cluster. So what does it look like to get Crossplane up and running?
So there are three parts to it, right? There is installation of, I'm going to make a parallel with, let's say Terraform, and I'm making a parallel without really entering into debate, Terraform this or that, right?
Yep.
You need to install Crossplane itself, just as you would install Terraform CLI in this case, right?
Okay.
You need providers that will, because it would be silly that it already comes with those 5,000 or whatever different endpoints. So install providers. And we have actually, in the past, we had provider like AWS. Now we split it. Now you have provider EC2 and everything related to EC2, provider RDS, AWS RDS, and so on and so forth. So you can pick and choose what you want. And the third part is optional, even though everybody uses. And then you create your own abstractions, right?
Right.
Just to avoid dealing with individual resources. Mm-hmm. Yourself.
Got it. And is the Crossplane component in sort of like the cluster itself done by operator or Helm, or like how is this actually installed?
Yeah, so everything is happening inside the cluster, right?
Yeah.
So that's one of the big differences, right? We are API based tool in a way, right? So it's not a CLI that it can do what it can do and cannot do and what it cannot do, right?
Yeah.
You're interacting all the time with Kubernetes API. You want to apply this resource, you apply that resource, and then something happens somewhere. EC2 gets created, right? You want to query all EC2 instances or everything that has this label, right? So same operations that you would do with Kubernetes. And that means also, and this is the good part, it is Kubernetes native. Mm-hmm, right. And what that means is that it works with anything else, mm-hmm. right? So you're like GitOps, excellent. Use Argo CD, we don't care. Mm-hmm. Yep. Kind of like, it's a Kubernetes resource. Right. You want to ship logs to Loki, because that's what you're doing. Yeah, mm-hmm. continue doing it, right? You like monitoring your stuff with Prometheus, continue doing it, right? So it's very focused on certain aspect, and it assumes that you're leveraging the power of the ecosystem itself, right? So we are unlikely ever to create a special mechanism to ship your logs, kind of. Why would we? Yeah. Or right. metrics, right?
Okay. So, yeah, that makes sense. So, you know, once you have the CRDs up and running, you can use the Crossplane CLI or just obviously interact with the CRDs with kubectl or the API.
Yeah, kubectl, yeah. Or you can package it as a Helm chart and then Helm install or ship it to Argos, to Git, and then synchronize it with Argo CD or Flux. It's like dealing with any other Kubernetes resource from the operational perspective.
Very cool. And Victor, I wanted to ask, like you said, right, like once I have Crossplane installed on a control plane cluster as acting as a control plane, and it can mm-hmm. spin up AWS credentials, how are those access keys stored on my control plane cluster? How does Crossplane have access to AWS or Azure or other Kubernetes clusters where these workloads are actually getting deployed, right?
Yeah, so Crossplane assumes that, so actually, when you install a provider, let's say AWS provider, mm-hmm. You have provider config that says that where you essentially, and this is simply for the version, you say, this is the secret with my credentials, right?
Okay.
And now whether you create that secret by kubectl, you know, echo, whether you create a YAML file with the secret and then push it to Git and let Argo CD synchronize it. Mm-hmm. If that's what you're doing, please let me know what's your repo.
Okay.
or you're keeping the credentials, I don't know, in Secret Manager, Vault, or Azure, Google Cloud, and then you use
all... Existing toolset will work.
Yeah,
okay.
Again, same thing. We assume that there is a secret. How you create that secret, up to you.
Okay, gotcha. And so next question is more around compositions, right? I know you already spoke a little bit about compositions, but I wanted to like learn more about it and also talk about what are composition functions and how are they different? Like I know in the recent conference that you did, that was a main topic of discussion, right?
You're talking about the things that are not released yet. Okay. Excellent.
We must know.
Yeah. So like any more around compositions, like, okay, as an admin, I'm creating those as, I know I'm going into the platform engineering spectrum, but like golden parts or easy ways for developers to do things.
Yes.
And
for developers and for yourself, right? I mean, the same thing, if I would go back in time and go back to the time of Terraform, right? Mm-hmm. You would be creating Terraform modules, hopefully. Now, most people never did that, which is ridiculous, and probably could fill in the whole episode of a podcast why people didn't do that. But yes, you want to group things, mm-hmm. and I think that's partly misunderstanding of what Kubernetes is. Somehow people think that I set up Kubernetes and I have a platform to do stuff, and my answer to that is absolutely freaking no. You get nothing. Kubernetes is very low level, right? It makes no sense for majority of people. So if I go to, let's say, and I'm going to ignore now Crossplane completely, right? Okay. Just to switch the subject and say, hey, dear developer, you can run your application in Kubernetes. And that person would say, hey, that's fantastic. Yeah, I heard about that. That's great. How do I define the application? Then you say, no, you cannot define an application. That's impossible. I mean, in Kubernetes out of the box. Oh, you know what? You can define a deployment and a service in a virtual service and ingress and 50 other set of things. That's not an application. Those are building blocks. Those are low-level details that were never supposed to be used directly, right? That's why like I'm a big fan of Knative, right? Knative does that abstraction. It's just that mm-hmm. Knative is opinionated. We are not. Says, no, this is how you define application, right? Gotcha. And I'm going to deal with low-level details that honestly, nobody cares about. Now, I'm old. if more than 2 minutes passes after I start answering question, that means that I already forgot your question. I don't know what I'm answering. So you need to be back on track. Sorry for that.
No worries. Like, it was more around compositions, which you already spoke about. And I
So compositions are that way to actually create something meaningful, right? Yep. To me, if I talk about applications, but applies to everything, to clusters, databases, ingress and service and deployment and all those things, that's not meaningful.
Yep.
Create something called application or create something called backend application. That has a meaning, right? That is something that somebody can understand.
Yeah.
So, and that's what compositions do.
Okay. And like, why, I know you said composite functions are not, or composition functions are not yet released yet, but why the need for something new?
Yes. So we had a long debate that basically when you create those compositions, right, people started making requests. Hey, this would be great, but I need to dynamically create resources through a loop, right? Let's say that I'm going to loop through subnets ABC, and then I want them to be created instead of specifying it explicitly, each one of them. No? Gotcha. And that's cool. We can add loop. Why not, right? But then there is another request. I want conditionals. And there is another request. We want this and this and this and this and that, right? And then it explodes. And from mine and also other people working on it experience, that almost always leads to that project becoming a trash can, right? When you actually, you start designing a DSL effectively, and you start fulfilling all those needs, and that's a never-ending game because it's never going to end, right? It's an infinite amount of requests.
I know. Go ahead. What's your thought?
So we started doing some of those things. And now this is not, I'm not promising anything, but it's even possible that we're going to remove some of those things we did. Because again, it's just becoming a trash can.
Yeah.
So instead of extending the...
I was going to say, to be fair, your documentation just says, also says, I'm looking at it right now, it says, Crossblade may drop this feature at any time. So it's very clear.
Yeah, exactly. So what we thought to do instead is functions that you mentioned, right? So, okay, this is the schema that is well-defined. It will not change much. This is what it does, right? Yep. And it's relatively static, right? And it's supposed to be like that. But then you can actually send, use a sort of a pipeline in composition and say, okay, this is what the schema does, but I can use... take this input, pass it to a function, and function is going to send some output, right? Mm-hmm. We don't care what that output is. We expect to have a list of resources that should be created in a cluster, right?
Gotcha.
Now, and then you, if the capabilities are not there, okay, you take 5 resources, pass it to a function. Function is going to output modified version of those resources, so or it's going to remove some of them, or it's going to add more. I don't care. It's in and out, and what you do in between, it's up to you, right? And for example, I've been working on a function that does the example I said, loop, right? I take input, I loop through it, generate some subnets or namespaces or whatever, resources, list, pass it back to Crossplane, Crossplane does the work, right? So it's a way how to extend it without creating a DSL that is impossible to comprehend at the end of the day, right? And then you as a consumer, you will have 2 choices, 3 actually. Now, use Crossplane composition schema as is, it works for some, or extend it with functions that are already made by somebody else. I can imagine in not so distant future having some kind of a marketplace.
Okay.
When I say marketplace, I don't mean for selling, but for sharing.
Yep.
Or create, or you say, hey, what I need to do has not been done by anybody else. I'm going to write a function and it's going to do that. And you can write, and we are not even opinionated how you write your function. You like Go, write in Go. Okay, cool. You want to use Helm to do some processing, do it, right? Nice. Q, Java, whatever you want. We just expect that there is a clearly defined input and output of that function. That's all.
Great. Yeah, I could see this, you know, I could see this really being useful in the, like, almost in the security context a little bit, just where my head went, in the sense that, like, Crossplane could have a composition that sets up some general stuff and someone could create it, but then a function could, like, verify or, you know, tap in and check some security components or add to it or whatever it may be. It kind of, like, magically happens behind the scenes, so the developer doesn't have to worry about it, you know. Just
can be,
you know,
anything.
Yeah.
Literally. Well, one example that occurred, and this is an example of something that would be silly to ever baked into Crossplane itself, compositions, is that we have a person or a team or a company asking, hey, I want to go to AWS API, calculate the list of IPs that I should use in this or that, then come back through it and use it in that definition.
No use for that to have it baked in.
Exactly.
Well, speaking of customization, right? Say if I had some obscure API that would, you know, start my dishwasher, make me an espresso, and fluff my pillow. Could I, you know, extend Crossplane to include that as a provider if I wanted to? And how does that
work? Yeah. As long as that something has an API that the provider Crossplane can talk to. So if your espresso machine is so funky and so modern that has an API. Then yes, you can do it, right? I know of an example of a provider that orders Domino pizzas, from Domino. Anything, as long we just need an API to talk to, and that API. I mean, it can be almost any API, not really any, because we need to be able to ask for the state of that something to get the answer to know what to do with it, right?
But keep it up,
Gotcha. Okay, so Victor, I think talking about the contributor base, I think I saw a number somewhere that there are like 1,500 plus contributors to the Crossplane projects and way more users. My question was, do you see, like, from a persona perspective, right? Are these developers that are building these compositions and treating or using them to deploy their applications, or you see more of the operations side or the SREs or the platform admins building these out and enabling self-service for their developers? Who's the user here?
I think that let's say the buyer, and when I say buyer, I don't mean for money, but person who gets Crossplane is more often than not, and this is not a rule, nothing guaranteed, is not the end user, but rather a intermediary between Crossplane and the end users, right? That's that person that creates those compositions, right? So let's say DBA, just to keep databases example, right? I want to enable people to manage databases. I'm interested in Crossplane because it enables me to create those compositions and shift left, right? Mm-hmm. Now, there are people who use it for themselves, kind of, we are in a company where developers have zero rights. You write no JS code. That's all you will ever do. I manage Kubernetes, and then that's the end user, right? It's becoming more and more popular to shift left, really, for many, many different reasons, right?
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I was just kind of building on that. I was kind of thinking through, and maybe you have insight into this, is how often Crossplane is used directly, kind of like we're talking about, and or as a tool to, like, an internal IDP or something like that, right?
Very common. People would create those compositions that define what something is, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. And then the rest depends, kind of, either, hey, you just define this YAML, push it to Git, and the magic will happen. Very often it is combined with Backstage or Port, some other frontends. Okay, we're going to give you web UI. And that's also one of the nice things about having API, because if you use some other tooling that are not API based, if you would want to build some that web UI interface on top, some kind of graphical user interface, you would most likely need to hard code every single page. Okay, this is the page, how you define, I don't know, this or that, right? What you can do with Crossplane, with Kubernetes in general, right? Doesn't have to be Crossplane, is that your graphical user interface becomes extremely dumb. Because all it has to do is go to the cluster and say, what are the CRDs you have?
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Here's the list of CRDs. Show it to the person on the screen, Caro. Okay, you can create something called backend application, frontend application, database cluster, right? Because those are the names of CRDs. Yeah. You click that button, and then it comes the form, right, with all the fields. But how do you get those fields? You don't hard code them in the app. You go back to the cluster and say, dear Kubernetes, can you please, please, please give me a schema of this object, right?
Yeah.
And you just paint it on a screen. So it becomes more native. I mean, it becomes that front-end type of development that in everywhere else we've been doing for many years. Mm-hmm. Front-ends are dumb. They're asking APIs what to do, how to do, and so on and so forth, right? It's just a machine that calls an API and paints it on a screen in a way.
I imagine the only thing that would still really need to happen there is like what data type input validation, because like to do this, the CRDs don't give that information, right? In terms of like you create a form, does it need an integer? Does it need a string? That kind of thing.
Actually, schema, some things yes, some things no.
Okay. Very cool.
When you it's open API schema when you define those compositions, and you definitely can define string, integer, this or that. Okay, you can define the values available. Mm-hmm. You can define quite a few things. Not everything you will need. But that's also where, you know, very often, Crossplane is very often combined with GitOps like Argo CD Flux with Backstage for the user interface, and then with something like Kiverno or OPA Gatekeeper for policies, right? Whatever is not defined in schema, you can define as a policy. And not only in schema, sometimes, so you can have a schema that says the options are ABC, but then you will have a policy that says, yes, but in this namespace, it's only A. Mm, don't even try it, right?
Yeah.
And then you would normally apply the policies that accompany those CRDs with policies.
Got it. Very cool. I do have one thing I've kind of been thinking about this as we're asking you questions is, you know, does Crossplane fall into the categorization of like digital twins in the sense that, you know, we just had a conversation about, you know, CubeEdge and how it's kind of creating the concept of digital twins for external devices, right? So a little sensor or something like that, but it's represented as an object or a CRD in the Kubernetes cluster.
Yeah.
Does that ever get talked about in the sense that Crossplane is kind of creating a digital twin for something else that lives somewhere else?
Very much. That's I wouldn't say very common because digital twin common concept is not yet widespread, those who know it are, that's one of the reasons they're choosing Crossplane. With the only small correction, it's not a CRD, it's CR becomes a digital twin, right?
Yeah.
So CRD would be a shipping container, right?
Right.
And then you have 5,000 CRs that represent 5,000 shipping containers.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yep. Very, very, very good.
Yes. Question. So as long as your digital twin is not supposed to be visual and kind of like in 3D and all that stuff.
I imagine most people think of just like, oh, it's just another version of me, you know.
So it's not a hologram. We don't give you holograms. Give us a year.
Yeah. That's the spirit. Okay. So Victor, I think talking about like, these are some awesome use cases, right? I also wanted to like ask about like, what are some of the other things that people are using Crossplane for, and where are the areas that people shouldn't consider Crossplane? Like, I'm sure like there might be some areas where like, okay, maybe choose something else. This is not the use case for Crossplane.
Yeah. So, my first criteria, the question that I actually indirectly already said early on, kind of, Crossplane is not for people who are new to Kubernetes, right?
Okay.
We haven't been using. Oh, I discovered Crossplane. This is going to be my entry point drug into Kubernetes. No, because Crossplane can be very, for certain people, can be very daunting, can be very scary and complicated because there are so many things happening which are very, very natural if you're familiar with Kubernetes, right? Oh, there are events, and then there is a concept of parent and child resources. You know, this resource create that resource that create this resource. When you want to know where is something, you need to follow the trail, and so on and so forth, right? Which are very, very natural if you're experienced with Kubernetes. But if you're not, please don't become our user.
you get lost.
Probably nobody before said in a public kind of like podcast, kind of, please don't.
Yeah. Especially who works for the company. Right? Well, hey, honesty goes a long way. That's what I have to say. Oh, speaking of that, then let's transition to, if people were to not follow your advice, go directly against what you just said, and get started with crossplane, even if they're new, where would they get their feet wet? Like, where should they start?
Crossplane.io has documentation. Depends what type of a person you are.
Yeah.
If you're, I like reading documentation, then crossplane.io. I will admit, documentation was horrible. I was trying to find a better word, but I couldn't.
I haven't heard one person like come on the show and been like, our documentation is awesome. So I'm just like waiting for that day.
It was bad. It's good now. It's not okay. Perfect, but it's, we've really, like, let's say for a year or so, we put, you know,
you're moving extra so fast, emphasis. Right? Yeah, exactly. It's hard to keep up. Yeah.
So documentation is fine. A lot of examples and all those things. And then I also published, so if you're more visual person, I published probably 4, 5, 6, 7, I don't know, videos so far about crossplane on my channel. So that's another place. And then Google is your friend. Awesome. Beyond those two.
Can you run it on your laptop if you wanted to get started, or do you have to have a, you know, a proper?
Yeah. I run it on my laptop all the time. Now, just don't install all 5,000 series. Yep.
Yeah, unless you want to see your memory go all the way down.
Or you have, I don't know, Mac Studio with, I don't know, 200 gigs of RAM or something like that, then go for it, yes.
Very cool, very cool. So you mentioned your YouTube channel. Can you tell us more about that? It's DevOps Toolkit, right?
Yes, DevOps Toolkit, exactly. If you look for, search for DevOps Toolkit, it's almost certainly going to pop up first. It's a hobby, right? And part of the reason, it's kind of, I think it's in a way special, or the reason behind it is in a way special, that I got sick from reading articles and watching videos and stuff like that, where every single, it always, did you notice that every article ends up with "it depends"?
Yeah.
And I hate that. I honestly hate kind of, okay, so let's talk about pipelines. You can use Jenkins, you can use Travis, you can use CircleCI, GitHub Actions, Argo Workflows. And the conclusion of this is depends. It doesn't. Grow a spine.
You want someone tell to me. Tell you what to do, opinionated.
I want opinion. I like opinionated people. Yeah. You being opinionated does not mean that I have to agree. It does not mean that I need to do everything you say.
Right.
But I want opinionated people that tell me this is good, this is and this is horrible, right?
Yeah.
Now, how many times did you hear people say this is really bad? Like, not good, no bueno. Kind of no, it doesn't happen often, right? So, and I wanted to do that, and so I go through stuff, and sometimes I don't think I have a single video that did not end up, they all end up with pros and cons, and I don't think that I had a single one that doesn't have cons, kind of, doesn't have
so none, bad so stuff. None of your videos are going to, I'm not going to watch one, and it's going to be like, it depends, at the very end. They're going to tell me what to do.
I'm doing just a good marketing to lure you in and into depends, yes.
No, I've heard this argument, right, in various forms, right? I think the most recent one was, you know, an X thread, which, mm-hmm. you know, you can go down a whole rabbit hole there. But basically, you know, someone saying it'd be great if documentation were to lead with one example that works really well.
Yeah.
Versus 10 that sort of works sometimes.
Exactly.
Not just that, right? You know, like, don't just start with like an easy hello world example. Give me something that's complicated, like that I can follow along and actually learn about it, rather than the basic 101 use case.
Yeah, and it doesn't even have to be example. I mean, I do almost everything hands-on, but it doesn't have to be even example. It can be, okay, if you're telling me about pipelines, don't tell me that they're all equally good, because that means that you never tried any of them. Right?
Yep. Yeah, those people are going for SEO results. Like, because if you list everything, that's how you get ranked higher, right?
And also not offend other people.
Sure. Yeah, well, it's hard to do these days. Mm-hmm. Speaking of offending other people, in case you do any writing,
do you have a list of people I should offend? Is that what you?
If you do any writing that may offend other people, where can people find you? And maybe some writing that you do, blogs or Slack. Don't find me.
I'm a lot. So in the past, I was publishing books and writing articles. Now I think that I'm mostly on YouTube and in conferences when public work, and of course, kind of project themselves. So, but if you look for Viktor Farsik or V Farsik, first letter of the name and then last name, you'll find me. I'm everywhere. Easy.
Everywhere. He's everywhere, folks. So go and find him. Very cool. Will you be at KubeCon Chicago?
Oh, yeah. 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 There, cool. every KubeCon on all three continents. Yeah, starting with rejects. That's my favorite part of KubeCon.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, we need to pick up some stickers, well. Ryan, like for Crossplane and all the other projects that we have worked with.
That's right. So yeah, hopefully we'll see you there. We will both be there as well. And I think that's really all we had for you today, Viktor. I think it's been really enlightening about learning more about what you're up to, what's going on with Crossplane and how it works. So I wanted to thank you for being on the show again.
Thank you for having me.
All right, Bhavan, that was a fun conversation. I know Victor's always a hoot to talk to, and he's up to all sorts of fun things on YouTube. If you know, we talked about it during the episode, but yep. Go check him out. Check him out what he's up to. He does a lot of really awesome content. But yeah, what are your takeaways from the episode?
I think I really like Crossplane, and it's time to like get my hands on again. Like I think I used Crossplane like a few years back when it was brand new and they had like a cool candy stick logo or something like that. Now it looks like with the whole platform engineering movement and IDPs, right, Crossplane is becoming relevant and top of mind again. I know we have seen a theme in our conversations, right? At DevOps Days Boston, when we were talking to Alex, he was like, IDPs should be read-only. Like you don't want somebody to mess with in an IDP. Victor is like, why do you even need a UI for your IDP? You just need orchestration and automation capability. So I think Crossplane definitely follows the same principles. Like it still gives those golden paths or composition flows for developers to deploy resources and manage their applications. But it doesn't, like you are not forced to go to a UI to do all of those things. Sure. So I think that's the thing that stands out. And also the fact that it was built from before. I don't know if it was before Kubernetes. I think it was after, but like it takes care of resources that are outside Kubernetes as well. So not just a Kubernetes specific tool, but it can also help you deploy an S3 bucket or an RDS database if you wanted to using those providers that Crossplane has. So pretty cool stuff. And it's an open source project that will have its own booth at KubeCon. So you can go and ask more questions there.
Yes, always a good opportunity if you are at KubeCon. I generally think, I know I mentioned, I think during the episode, sort of the data center operating system, right? We see this kind of concept come up a lot. Kubernetes is being used for much more than just Kubernetes. I think Crossplane is a great example of that, you know, being able to, like you said, manage those things. And one thing we talked about was compositions. I thought the flexibility of compositions and to customize them is a really powerful tool, especially when it comes to IDP, right? The concept that you can say, well, I want an object that represents pretty much anything you want, but I gave you an example of a developer environment. Well, you're onboarding someone new. You just, you know, you can have your IDP kind of configure what you want in the environment, all through APIs. I think a really powerful tool, right? And you know, that comes with complexity, right? Victor did say, you know, don't start here. But I think that comes with anything that kind of builds on an abstraction of something else that's complex, right?
No, I like the fact that he's like, even though this is running on Kubernetes and can manage everything, but because it's running on Kubernetes, you need to understand how that works. Everything is a custom resource or a custom resource definition in Crossplane. So if you don't know what those mean, you'll have a really hard time figuring
it
out.
There's your benefit of UI right there. There it is. Yeah. You don't have to understand it if you just click a few buttons.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just being devil's advocate here.
That's true, right? And again, we know Backstage is super popular, and like there are vendors like VMware and Red Hat and all of those that are building these enterprise versions of Backstage. So definitely like a UI helps. It's just interesting to see different perspectives.
Absolutely. Cool. Well, you know, that brings us to the end of this episode, but we do always, as always, please join our Slack. You can find the button, excuse me, I'm getting over a little cold, to find our Slack on KubernetesBytes.com. Bhavan and I will, of course, be at KubeCon Chicago. Look for our sweatshirts.
There you go.
If you spot us, we'll give you some stickers. There you go. We have to have stickers in our pockets then. That's really what I just put.
Always
right
ready. There. Always be prepared. Like Boy Scouts, but Kubernetes Bytes version.
You know, of course, check out our YouTube channel. Subscribe there. Yeah. Give us some reviews, whatever it may be. We did get a few folks in Slack suggest some episodes. Awesome. Thank you for those who did that. We will definitely get on and take that advice. So anyway, I think that brings us to the end of today's episode. I'm Ryan.
I'm Bhavan.
And thanks for joining another episode of Kubernetes Bytes. Thank you for listening to the Kubernetes Bytes podcast.